This is Northland Angler, the Northland Tackle Podcast.
Today we have the opportunity and the privilege of chatting with one of the inductees into the 2019 class of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, Chip Lear. Chip, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be here because we are on the eve of ice fishing, so it's time to get all amped up.
No doubt. And you know, the reason we haven't been able to talk, you are a busy dude. Talk a little bit about all the things you have going on.
Well, I wear a lot of hats. I made a commitment a long time ago to make a living in the fishing industry, and to do so, you find different ways to keep yourself busy. So this time of year, obviously, we're just wrapping up everything we need to do for next year's open water season, so it's kind of crunch time. Getting the last few fish caught and coming over the side of the gunwale and testing new products that are going to hit the open water market in years to come. So a lot of product testing, a little bit of marketing with photographs, but I've also doing Cabela's National Walleye Tour television. When we wrapped up our season here on Lake of the Woods in September, we got that done. We're looking towards next year, and a lot of alignment, putting things in line for the coming season, both ice and next year's open water. That's the beauty of living in Minnesota with all the different seasons, is there's you got to plan ahead a little bit because weather changes.
Yes, it does.
Just a little bit.
And you're an outdoor guy. Do you even get a chance to hunt anymore?
I love to hunt. I haven't spent as much time hunting in the last couple of years as I once did, but that's okay. I've spent more time fishing, and especially more time fishing during key big fish periods, and that's the big fish really trip my trigger.
Well, and you definitely have spent a lot of time fishing, and you have just been inducted into the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, so congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. It's a little humbling.
Well, it's quite an honor. Certainly, you know, I don't know a lot of the guys in the Hall of Fame, but I know, you know, the Peterson brothers, first of all. I know Al Moss, obviously. So, I mean, there's some pretty big names in there.
Well, that's the part that really takes you back when you get the letter of induction is what the first thing that goes through your mind is all the guys that you have learned from and aspired to be, yeah, or to be worthy of, you know, and all your peers. So it's really, really a humbling moment when you open that letter.
What do you think went into your selection?
I have no idea. I think it's the fact that I'm not afraid to try a lot of new things. My biggest thing that I've always worked for in the world of fishing is my ability to push all of us. I mean, I've never claimed to be the world's best fisherman because that's not who I am. I've never had the ability to really push the envelopes in terms of innovation, in terms of techniques. But what I have been able to do is refine techniques that other people that have developed them, I've helped refine. And most importantly, I think I've looked at my role as a real, for lack of a better term, a cheerleader to the sport, where I think that so many people hit the water and they believe that when they go out in that day that they're not going to catch any fish. And if they don't catch any fish, they won't catch any fish. But so much of fishing is mental, way more mental than anybody gives it credit for. So if you go out in that day and say, I'm going to catch fish today, you can catch fish today. And that's one of the things that I've really tried to communicate to people over the years, is that you can catch fish. You just got to keep pushing yourself and using every bit and piece of information that you've ever learned about a species or a technique or a time of year. Every day is a new puzzle, and you just got to keep adding pieces of that puzzle until you catch some fish, because you will find them. You will catch them if you keep pushing yourself forward. But if you don't think you're gonna, you never will.
And of course, you've got your own website and multimedia empire, if you will. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came to be.
Well, it's a pretty small empire. fishinthewildside.net is my website. Fish in the Wild Side I have used as a promotional name since right around 2000, I think, was probably, well, I guess it was even before that. Late 90s is really when it all started to come together. And it was just nothing more than needed a name to send our message or to carry the message. And we've done everything from, actually make and distribute free fishing publications to retailers all across the country. And then we've watched the whole change from print and television, which we were involved in television for a number of years, into the whole digital marketplace that we have now, and utilizing social media and different types of digital marketing to carry the message on behalf of manufacturers to the public, but most importantly, to just keep motivating people to fish more often and to keep trying. And it's really fun. And it's all about... Part of it's all about catching fish, but it's also about getting out, getting in the outdoors, enjoying the environment, and having fun, because that's what fishing is to me.
Let's go back. I mean, you're in the Hall of Fame. You've obviously been a very successful person in the fishing industry. Let's go back to the beginning. Chip Lear is a very, very young boy. How does he find his way into this world?
Well, amazingly enough, it's right here in this area. My mom graduated from Cass Lake High School.
Oh, okay.
And she's now 90 years old, and she still fishes when she comes up to visit. She lives in Minneapolis now, but when she comes up to visit and we get her off on the dock at our house at Leech Lake, she still catches fish off the dock, and she's active at 90. But two of her brothers, and they had a family of six, but two of her brothers were, they all loved to fish, but one had a cabin on the Cass Lake chain, Wolf Lake to be exact, and the other, one of her brothers, lived right here in Bemidji, across from the old Blue Ox Resort.
Oh, yeah.
And which is no longer there, and he had a lumber mill in Shevlin. But being the youngest of five boys, I'm envisioning my mom was a little tired, and with sports schedules and everything else, they put me on a Greyhound bus, and I'd take the Greyhound bus all the way up to Cass Lake. I'd get off that bus. I'd go spend time at the uncle's cabin on Wolf Lake, and we got up every morning. We went out and caught walleyes on a weed line. Then I would come over into Bemidji and spend time at my uncle's house here in Bemidji, and I'd walk across the street to the Blue Ox Resort, and I'd row this boat out in front of a little pencil reeds, and I'd throw over an anchor, and I'd catch perch all day long, and I'd bring them all back. We'd clean them all up, and we'd eat them. They also had a cabin up on Lake of the Woods, and that's where I started my fishing guiding career 30 years ago. And my love for Lake of the Woods came from those trips up there and going fishing and catching fish in the islands up there. And that's what eventually drew me back there as a young adult after going through college and trying life in the real world and trying to make real, make that work. I'm like, I don't think I'm cut out for this. I think I'm my real calling is to go fishing and become a fishing guide. And that was my whole life goal at that point, was to move up, live on Lake of the Woods, catch fish, and get paid for it. And that's what I did.
So what were you trying to make a living at before you decided enough of that?
Just about everything that you could imagine, but mostly in sales and different types of business, but mostly I tried a lot of different types of sales. That's what my dad was. He was a salesman. And so I tried that, and it was funny. It was just, I was so impatient because I'm in my 20s, and I'm like, boy, this work thing, this is going to take way too long to get to where at least I think I want to be. And part of that comes from the fact that my dad had passed away at a pretty young age, and he always had this he always talked about the fact that he was eventually going to retire and he was eventually going to take time off. Well, he had five kids, my mom, he's supporting everybody, and it's no easy road to hoe. And when he passed away early, and I was in my early 20s, that was a big lesson that, it's life's journey that we got to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that's what motivated me to want to turn my passion into a living and just go fish and let the rest fall into place.
So how do we go from a Lake of the Woods guide to where we're at now?
Oh gosh, there was a lot of things. You bump into a lot of people along the way. One of the first things I happened to me when I was living on Lake of the Woods was I'd gotten contacted by a group that was making a book on fishing. The old Side of Cost Company was making a book on musky fishing, and that was actually through Paul and Greg Thorne. I'd hung around two places growing up, so it's interesting how this works. So down in Minneapolis, I started hanging around Thorne Brothers, got going as a fishing guide. Thorne Brothers Custom Rods and Retail Store kind of gave me some help and direction. At the same time, I wrote a letter to Northland Fish and Tackle here in Bemidji, Minnesota, letting John Peterson know that I was going to be a guide on Lake of the Woods and I'd love to, you know, I loved his tackle, and I'd like to get some tackle, and he let me buy some tackle. And anyway, make a long story short, he sent me a handful of jigs and a hat, and that was 30 years ago. So I've been associated with Northland Fish and Tackle since those early days.
Wow.
Thorne Brothers, Paul and Greg Thorne at Thorne Brothers, helped me really kind of navigate the early days of the business because I stayed in contact with them. They're the ones that had this contact that there was these people working on a muskie book, and this was the Sidacos Hunting and Fishing Library books. Billy Linder was the photographer. Dick Sternberg was the writer. All of guys that have moved on to great heights inside the fishing industry and made some connections early on, just kind of stayed in touch with those people. And as my guiding career evolved, so did my career in assisting manufacturers with getting their products photographed and marketed.
And then you work your way to Walker some way, somehow.
Yeah, because you meet people along the way, and you're doing. There was a couple of lessons that I took early on. First was when I was living on Oak Island, convinced my wife to move up to Oak Island, and that we were going to turn this lodge, Angle Inn Lodge, up on Oak Island. We're going to help them open up and create an ice fishing business because there was no ice fishing business on the north end of Big Traverse Bay. There was a couple of fish houses for rent, but there really was nobody. There was nobody on four blocks. There was nobody up there. And so we got that lodge open. And the first winter we were open, an outdoor writer showed up. I took him fishing, cooked him some fish on the ice, had a successful experience. The phone started ringing. From this article that got written in a small little suburban newspaper in Minneapolis. And we darn near filled the whole lodge from one article. That was, Okay, life lesson number one, media works.
Yes, I agree with
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. media works really well, so pay attention to that. Secondly, I'd worked with these companies helping get some photographs on some of their products early on, and a sales rep that I met through Thorne Brothers introduced me to Jeff Arnold at Reed Sporting Goods in Walker, Minnesota. And in the wintertime, between ice fishing, which was not a complete full-time gig in those years, he was running around and doing sports shows. And he grabbed me and said, hey, why don't you come on the road with me? And subsequently, we went to sports shows. In the days that there was no internet, there was nothing. You had to go to the town, and that helped me learn a lot more about the industry, a lot more about the products that were available in the industry, a lot more about how all these companies worked to get their products into the retailers, and an enormous amount from his genius marketing mind through those years. So some great years on the road with Jeff Arnold.
And found your way to Walker, and you just continued to find new ways to promote this great sport.
Yeah, my wife and I had moved from Lake of the Woods, went over to Rainy Lake and Lake Cavatogama, and over that way, and an opportunity evolved to an opportunity opened up in Walker, Minnesota, to move down here. We're closer with the Arnolds. In fact, we ended up buying a resort with the Arnolds out on Leech Lake called Adventure North. And my wife ran the resort, and I helped develop a guide organization called Leech Lake Guide Coalition in those years. And with the Leech Lake Guide Coalition, I took the marketing that I'd learned, and we started a publication, which all launched into Fishing the Wild Side. And one thing led to another. And that's when you get to know all of the great anglers, the Jeff Woodruffs and the Ted Gwynns and the Al Mosses and the Shrivers and all the legendary guides of Leech Lake. I got to know those guys really well and launched where I am today.
Wow. And in addition, you found your way to the podium for a couple of different tournaments over the years.
Exactly, and so the one common denominator is its people, and that's the whole deal. Fishing is a people industry, and it's all about relationships, and it's all about getting to know people and celebrating the sport along the way. And from those early ice fishing guiding days, up on Lake of the Woods in a fish house, met a guy that worked for a company that was starting a pro bass tour called the Minnesota Pro-Am Bass Tour. So I ended up going down to Minneapolis and auditioning for a television gig for the Minnesota Pro-Am Bass Tour so that once again, it's people, right? So mm-hmm. you meet somebody somewhere, and the next thing you know is they call you up a couple years later and go, hey, I got a gig for you. And we launched the Minnesota Pro-Am Bass Tour, and that was my first time on stage emceeing for tournaments, at least on a, you know, on a sizable level. And it really went from there. And today, you know, I've gone on to work for the In Fisherman's Professional Walleye Trail, went on to the FLW and their walleye circuit, and now the National Walleye Tour. So it's really been fun.
Talk a little bit about the National Walleye Tour. What is it you like about that type of fishing?
What I love about competitive fishing is observing the best anglers at their craft dissect a body of water in a very short period of time. And I, as a fisherman, I learn more about fishing and how I can adapt my fishing better to where I fish from how these anglers pick apart a body of water. So there's the competitive side of it, which is really fun. But to me, it's all about a fish. It's the fishing angle that really trips my trigger, and it's getting to a body of water and watching anglers that have never been there before, or maybe they've been there a number of times, but it clicks something inside their minds that really helps them attack it in a slightly more unique, different way. Because I think as fishermen, one thing that I see us all do is we like routine. We like to go out and we like to fish the same point or the same bar or the same reef or the same weed line, fishing the same way with the same things over and over and over again. And if the fish don't bite, we just go, that's easy, the fish aren't biting. Tournament fishing doesn't work that way. You got to push yourself a little bit, and that's what I like about tournament fishing is the guys that push themselves the hardest generally end up finding a way to catch fish. And that's why I come back to what I believe, which you can always catch fish if you put your mind to it. If all you want to do is go out and drift around in a boat, that's just fine. But if catching fish is your priority, just don't let failure be an option. Keep pushing yourself until you figure out a way to make them bite.
I do the Knights of Columbus Walleye Classic here now, so I'm no Chip Lear, but I've been up on stage enough to know that I know there's got to be some guys that come up stage and you're going, oh boy, I got to find a way to get a couple words out of this guy. And other people hear this, oh good, I'm glad this guy, because I know he's going to talk.
And that's all part of it, is their personality. And that's why I look at myself when I'm communicating. If we're just talking fishing, you know, most of the guys that come up on the stage, if we're just talking about fishing, that's the easiest thing in the world for them to talk about, because that's why they're there. They're passionate about it. They do it a lot. And you just try to ask questions and provoke conversation for what they like the most. The most awkward conversations on stage are the ones that are the anglers that feel that they have to promote products in order to make a living and be a pro and all that. And it always comes out awkward and sounds terrible. But it is what it is, you know. Yeah. But for the anglers that I talk to a lot of young anglers about just that when they're coming up through the National Walleye Tour, is you get up stage, you talk about what you're comfortable with. Don't force something to, you know, that stuff doesn't work. But if we get up there and just talk fishing and you talk about what works and why it works, it's pretty smooth and pretty easy. And that actually motivates more people to go fishing. Now we're at a point where economy's good, boat companies are selling boats, motors are selling, everybody seems relatively happy. The dollar amounts at these tournaments keep getting larger and larger and larger. Yep. I mean, we're watching the bass side just absolutely explode. Walleye generally follows. Where's this all going? I don't know, but I am really happy to be along for the ride right now, because this is fun for me.
Well, so when back in your first TV experiences, did you lean on your brother for a few tips? Rob Lear, your brother, used to be involved in the TV biz.
Yes, my brother Rob. I actually have two brothers involved in TV.
Oh, really?
But my brother Rob obviously was a did a lot of sports. Started in Grand Forks, North Dakota, at WDAZ, and went on to KSTP, mm-hmm. Which is Hubbard Broadcasting,
yes.
By the way.
Yes, yes it is.
Imagine that. And had a nice career for himself. And now he consults companies on how to deal with media in Minneapolis. And yeah, he motivated me that there was nothing to it. You can get up there and do it. I've got another brother that's an actor living in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
So he's doing it on a little different scale. He actually has to remember lines and things.
Ooh,
I just get up
tough.
And make it up as I go along. I got the easiest gig there is. Just talk about stuff I like.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've obviously enjoyed it. You ever have one of those days where you say, I just don't want to talk about fishing today?
Why?
Okay,
no,
I figured that was going to be your answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's fishing. I mean, I you got to remember, I mean, I'm really, really lucky to have figured out a way that I can make a living talking about what I like. And that's why I come back to it's really humbling to be recognized and to be now to become a part of the Fishing Hall of Fame, because this is something. I mean, fishing is just something that I've always loved, and it's never really been work. Some of the activities that you've had to do and some of the road is grind is work, but the actual participation in the sport and learning about the sport and sharing what I learn from others with others, that part is never been work. That's always come relatively easy, and that's what makes fishing is that it's a passion. It's fun.
Who and I know you know a lot of people, and I've been inspired by a lot of people. Is there any one or two that you could say these were the guys that really I modeled my career after?
I think, well, there's it's bits and pieces. It's same as fishing. So here's how I look at that. How did you become the angler that you are today? Well, it's because I learned a little bit from this guy, I learned a little bit from this guy, I learned a little bit from this guy. That's what I've said. I've never been the one with all the answers to fishing, but I have taken lots of information from very good anglers and adapted it to how I fish. And then I share that information with others that I can help them fish. In this career, I have learned a lot of things in a lot of different ways from a lot of great people, from the Petersons to the Jeff Arnolds of the world to the Thorne brothers of the world to to the Doug Stangies in my times associated within Fisherman and Jim O'Rourke from the old MC from the PWT days,
oh, yeah,
to Jim Kalkofen, the tournament director, to Sonny Reynolds at the FLW. I mean, the list does not stop. It's about, you know, making friends and learning from everybody that we are so lucky to work with in this industry, and just making the best me I can be. And that's all I've ever tried to do is be Chip. I don't want to be anybody else. I just want to be me, mm-hmm, and share my passion, because I think people will hopefully be motivated by that.
Well, I'll tell you this. One of the reasons I like to have Chip Lear on my show is when I check the podcast numbers, whenever Chip Lear's on, they go through the roof. So.
Well, that's nice to hear. Thank you very much. Well, I actually have a big family.
Oh, okay. Well, Chip, let's talk about some of the other things you're involved with. Like you say, you work with Northland Tackle on tackle development. Anything cool coming up we want to be keeping our eye on in the future?
Well, there's always cool that's coming, and that's part of what makes tackle tackle. I think that Northland Fish and Tackle has had a long history of innovation and really jumping on top of things that are catching fish right now. Techniques that have been around forever continue to catch fish and will continue to catch fish, but adapting them to the new and now is what keeps you on top, and that's what Northland does. Their new glow shot jig for this winter, I'm behind 100%. The glow shot spoon, which actually has a split ring and a treble hook, that's a spoon. The jig has got a fixed hook to a solid body, but again, utilizing those glow sticks. That part is, I've seen so much. I know that I'm catching more fish because of the use of glow, especially when it comes to the world of fishing. I still think that we've got a long lot to learn about how strong of a glow attracts and catches fish, and when we want it super bright and when we want it kind of dim and dark. You know, sometimes we like a bright light. Sometimes we like it just a little bit off color, and I think there's a lot to be learned there, but the glow shot jig, I know, is going to produce fish. I've been using it the last year and a half now underneath the floats. So anytime I've got a set line, that has been my go-to hook.
Okay. As you look at the fishing scene overall, I mean, it's changed so much over the years. It's been changed since I started doing fish in Paul Bunyan country, which seems like yesterday, but it's been 20 plus years. So, What's the biggest change in your mind?
The biggest change I've seen in the fishing industry, at least most recently, is the interest in youthful competitive fishing. So the high school fishing leagues that have sprouted up and developed, the college fishing, which we had the championships right here on Lake Bemidji, that aspect of it and the competitive aspect of it, I've seen the most growth. It's also, in our part of the world, it's almost taboo to say, but the bass world, right, has really exploded. And I think that's because it's more physical, it's more active, it's more proactive. You're up, down, moving around a lot more often than walleye fishing. But so that part has really grown substantially, at least in most recently, and that's what I've seen the biggest difference in. That and technology. And I think the reason that these two things are kind of hand in hand is because those high school, college generational anglers, the ones that are jumping into the sport, the learning curve's never been, I don't necessarily want to say easier, but it is definitely faster because of technology and the fact that I can utilize mapping and historical data, which you can enter into your electronics now, and punch in that I'm looking for a steep break that goes to the main basin, that comes off hard bottom towards soft bottom. You can put all this information and punch into a map, and your map is suddenly highlighted where you need to concentrate your time. That all used to be trial and error, and now you can learn a body of water in a very short period of time and target fish in areas that should hold fish that much quicker. And I think that's why we're seeing a push of youth into the sports, because it's getting easier to do and they're using technology to do it, which is great.
And that's really good news, because that has been the thing I've heard the most concern about, actually, within the last decade, is that there are fewer young people fishing. But this might bring that back.
Absolutely. It could be what we've all been looking for. Now, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit here, too, because how many of these youthful anglers are here to stay because of the fishing? How many are here for the competition? How many are here? You know, we don't know where all these numbers are going to shuffle out at the end. But sure, the fact we got more people fishing, this is a great thing.
Yeah. What would you say, big picture, all the years being a part of the industry, what's your biggest concern right now?
My biggest concern is the same thing it's been my entire career, which is the environment.
Yeah.
We cannot take our resources for granted, period. And to look at it as this is the way it is and things are just going to change because that's the way it is not the way to look at it. We're responsible for taking care of our environment. I think as sportsmen, hunters, and fishers, we generally do a really good job of this. But I think we can continue to improve and to continue to monitor ourselves and be our own greatest critics when it comes to taking care of the environment.
Well, we have certainly seen, I mean, I don't think you can dispute, we have seen changes in fish populations within the last decade. For some reason or other, the number of smallmouth bass, you know, on Leech Lake, it's up here in Bemidji now, that's a unique change.
The environment changes, and that's what makes the sports great, and that's what makes the environment great, and our natural resources wonderful, because they do evolve and change. And when I bring up resources, I'm not talking about my concern, whether I have concern about their health, but I have mostly my biggest concern is that we just monitor them and look out for them as they are. I think natural resources evolve and change over time naturally, mm-hmm. And that we are to just basically try to stay as best out of their way as we can and influence them to the and just let them be. And if we let them be and enjoy what they provide, we're going to be a lot happier.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's bumming that we have smallmouth bass up
here. Oh, no. I'm not saying, but that's all good. But yeah, we're also seeing We're also seeing change in terms of aquatic invasive species. Yep. We're seeing water clarity changes. We're seeing all these things changes. And a lot of people just want to throw their arms up, and that's not what I'm saying at all. I think that there's no more important time to stand up and take recognition of our resources and our responsibilities for them than there is right now, and to look out for each other and to stand up. And if you see somebody doing something that is not favorable, that you mention it. And it's, you know, and you push them on that issue, and we got to look out for each other.
Well, certainly we just got bad news in the AAS front here on Lake Bemidji, and you know, when I brought it, and I've talked to a few people about it, and it was like resignation. It was like, well, we knew it was only a matter of time, and it's like, well, yeah, but did it have to be just a matter of time?
I despise that answer.
I know you do.
I don't like it at all. It's not the way to look at it. Yes, okay, so now we know it's there. Now we know factually that it's part of our life. But it's all of our responsibilities to do whatever we can do to prevent spreads going forward, to clean, drain, dry wherever we go. And now we just see how the resource responds, right? And we see, but generally I believe that resources will take care of themselves long term. We've watched other lakes in other parts of the world that get invested with an aquatic invasive species. Fishing continues, life continues, we evolve through it. It's never what it was, but hopefully we can its impact is low enough that we're still able to enjoy the resources as best we can. And most importantly, going forward now, that we take care of our resources and monitor our equipment so we can have the least amount of impact as possible.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, to say, well, I'm not going to check that closely because it's all going to get up here anyway. That's not the answer.
No, I mean, and that's right. You think back about when the college had the championships here and how many of these kids had come from different parts of the country that really are in absolutely awful resource shape, and how they commented how the headwaters of the Mississippi and how beautiful and pristine it was here, and the weed growth here, and just how this was just such a unique part of the world. They'd never seen anything like it, right? We still have a lot to be proud of, and we got to keep protecting that.
I think most of them were really stunned at the amount of work they had to do to get those boats allowed on the water even.
Yeah, absolutely. We care about our resource and we protect it, and our aquatic invasive species and our water and soil people are working overtime to make sure that we protect that. And that's, I think it's important that we have groups and part of our resource, our natural resource departments that are looking out for it. But most importantly, that's what I keep coming back to. It's our responsibility. It's an angler's responsibility. It's a resource user's responsibility. And it isn't just fishermen. It's whether you are a water skier or a tuber or a pontoon boat owner, whoever you are, or you're buying a dock that's coming from another lake and is moving from one body of water to another. These are all things that need to get monitored.
Okay. So your advice for the guy who wants to be the next Chip Lear?
You got a couple different ways that can respond to that, but if the question really is any advice, you got somebody that wants to make a living and try to make it in the fishing world, is do it. I mean, why not go? But most importantly, don't be anybody other than who you are. And I think mm-hmm. that's where there's a lot of times in our sport, and especially you see it a lot on social media, where everybody wants to be Al Linder, or everybody wants to be somebody that they're not. And what's interesting about what I think is great about the fishing world is there's plenty of room for lots of personalities. And if you're the best you can be, it'll evolve and you will end up where you're supposed to be. I thought I was going to be a fishing guide forever. It didn't work out that way, but I'm really happy it didn't. I still love to fish. I still get to fish. I get to fish in different ways than I ever could as a fishing guide. And that's the evolution that I've gone through, and I've been very happy with it. And I think it could be for anybody if they get in there and just try.
I think one of the biggest changes I've seen is the marketing savvy of this new generation of fishing guides and people who are trying to make it in the fishing business. Used to be I had to pull teeth to find people to be on the show, and now I don't have enough shows for everybody who wants to be on.
Well, and I think part of that has become when people were very if you put a microphone or a camera on somebody's face, they would their personality would change, and they had a really rough time with social media and phones and all of this, and everybody making tapes and selfies and all that kind of stuff. Everybody's going to be that much more comfortable with media, and that's good because it allows us to share more fishing information more freely, and which benefits all of us that are looking to become better anglers, which is part of me because you're always looking for one more trick, aren't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. Chip, any other final thoughts?
No, thanks for having me, and I think a big part of our sport and our growth of the sport is guys like you, Kevin, and Fish and Paul Bunyan Country and all that you've done to help us share that information over the airways. And I just want to say thank you to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Chip Lear is in the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. He will be inducted at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis in March. So if you're thinking about going to that show, you'll want to do that and be part of this history-making day. Chip, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Kevin.